Church attendance is our topic for this particular portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dr. Byron Johnson of Baylor University. And we're even going to look at the issue of church attendance back in the colonial era, as well as church attendance today. Dr. Johnson, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jerry. It's always good to be on with you.
Okay. What was it like in the colonial experience of America in terms of church attendance? And I guess it would depend on the century. I'm sure in the 1600s there was a lot more church attendance. And then we had the 1700s, but let's look at the 1700s, you know, beyond, you know, after many of the Puritans died off and their sons and daughters didn't carry on the same traditions. What was it like, let's say, around the founding era in the 1770s or so?
Well, believe it or not, we've actually got some pretty good data that go back that far. And the percentage of Americans that belong to congregations in, let's say, 1776, about 17% belong to a local congregation. So not that, you know, not that many churches really existed for a lot of people to participate in. And the country, I think some people believe, you know, was remarkably religious at its outset, but that's not altogether true.
Well, wait a minute. What about knowledge of the Bible, let's say, among the population in 1776?
Well, that's another issue where I don't know how well people have data that would allow us to monitor,
right,
you know, biblical literacy at that time.
Sure.
But I think some people are under the impression that when they came over on the Mayflower, that these were all uniquely religious people. A lot of them wanted to leave for many different reasons, some of which were religious, but that didn't mean that they were all saints that were coming to America.
Sure.
And so if you look at church attendance or those people, that the percent that belong to congregations, it's a very low figure going back to those, you know, the founding of the country.
Huh, that's interesting. Now, by the way, just anecdotally, okay, if you look at, as an example, the speeches and the writings of Abraham Lincoln, you see that he uses biblical phraseology and phrases and quotes and so forth. And his people knew, the people listening to him knew what he was talking about when he said, "A house divided against itself cannot stand."
Yep.
He's quoting Jesus Christ, and people knew it. Nowadays, more people know who Big Bird is, who, as opposed to Noah's Ark or something like that. So it's, you know,
well,
we're in a very biblically illiterate age.
That you know, moving from the 1770s up to the time that Lincoln was giving that speech, another 100 years has passed. And so there's a dramatic increase in the percentage of Americans that are linked to congregations over time. So let's go back to 1776. What percentage of Americans belong to a congregation? About 17%. And then if you fast forward to 2000, that percentage is around 70% of Americans that were linked to congregations. So from 1776 to 2000, a dramatic increase in people. And so it was significantly different between that time of the founding and the time that Lincoln would have given that speech.
Huh. Interesting. By the way, going back to the 1776 statistic that you said, mm-hmm. 17% belonged to congregations. Did they go to church regularly, those ones that belonged? Or do you know?
These are people that would tend to say that they are a member of a congregation.
And presumably they would attend on a regular basis.
Presumably they would have attended on a regular basis. You would assume that membership implied regular attendance. It could be that people, you know, would have said that they were members and they didn't attend that often. But it looks as if, again, at that early outset, not that many Americans, and there really weren't that many churches, Jerry, so it wasn't like they didn't. You know, there were churches everywhere and no one belonged. There really weren't that many churches geographically in that period of the of our country.
Would that have been home fellowships, Bible studies, whatever? I mean, something to kind of supplement.
I think that there would be a lot more that that would not get measured in those early data. So it could be that there were, you know, Bible studies or other informal meetings that were apart from, and just like there are now. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, one of the things with data is that, I mean, and you know that there's this large discussion that's taking place right now about the rise of the nuns, those that are not affiliated at all.
And that word, by the way, is N-O-N-E, as in they have none.
Yes.
They put down none in terms of what's your religion? None,
right.
N-O-N-E.
Yeah, and so some of these data are misleading. And, you know, there's some recent Gallup data out that says that church membership has now dipped below a majority level in the country. And some of that data is really problematic. I do a lot of work with Gallup. I love Gallup. The problem is surveys are becoming increasingly difficult to even field because so many people are not responding. And so our samples are somewhat problematic. You know, a lot of people, I don't know about you, but when your phone rings at home, you may not even answer it because you're screening all of the calls.
Right.
That wasn't the case 20 years ago. And so that makes it difficult right there. What kind of samples are we talking about in terms of who are these, what are these studies showing in terms of nuns? They're not affiliated at all. Who are they actually getting to answer on these calls? And then the way that the questions are asked are not very helpful. So it could say, you know, are you attending any of the following churches? And it lists a number of churches. And if you don't see your church on that list, you would put none, N-O-N-E. Well, that's because you didn't see your church on the list. You actually do attend a church, or a lot of people do, we have found, when we ask additional questions, and they might indicate, I attend something called the Church of the Savior. That's not on your list, so I put none. But you wouldn't know that unless you asked another question or two while you had those people on the line.
Do you believe that modern America is more religious, and I mean by that mostly Christian, than we're led to believe by, you know, let's say some of the research we keep hearing about?
Oh, it is a fact that we're being fed inaccurate information. The people that I work with, we study religion full time all across the world. And, you know, I've mentioned this to you before. All the best data seem to indicate the world is more religious than it's ever been. And you could argue that religion in America, although it keeps changing, it looks a lot different over time. Americans are still some of the most religious people on the planet. And if you take a look at the mainline denominations in the U.S., they have lost millions of members over the last number of decades. But those are people that have not fallen away from the faith. They are going to different congregations. They have switched. And so, you know, just because I used to be an Episcopalian and now I'm a Pentecostal doesn't mean I'm no longer affiliated. It just means my affiliation looks completely different than it did a decade ago. And so that's what's happened. I mean, even in the Southern Baptist Convention, which is, one of the largest denominations in the U.S., they've lost about 2 million members recently. But the Baptist community has remained intact. So, in other words, I may have gone to a Southern Baptist Convention congregation, and now I'm attending a different Baptist denomination within that broader category. So even there, I think some of the statistics are completely misleading about who is or who isn't participating.
You know, I think it's interesting, too, that you would mention the Southern Baptist by name, because here we are talking about the largest Protestant denomination in America. And yet, in the last year or two or three or so, there's been this problem of the wokeism and the CRT, critical race theory, and, you know, different congregations splitting and so forth. And and what you're saying, though, is that those who are leaving are still Baptists. They're just not Southern Baptists.
Yes, And so there may be other political things that are happening that would, you know, influence your decision to maybe leave one form of a Baptist congregation, but then to affiliate with another. So this is quite common. And so people would still say, I'm Baptist. I'm just not this shade of Baptist. This is one of the things, Jerry, that's so unique about America is that, and the founders knew this to be the case, if you didn't have a state religion, which much of Europe still has, a state religion that's sanctioned by the government, if you allow it to be pluralistic and allow a religious competition, like, you know, you would think about competition in any kind of economic way,
yeah,
that people will pick and choose. And that's what's happened. And that's why religion is so unique in America, is that there's so much of it, even though it's very diverse.
Yep. You know, when you're saying these things, I think of James Madison wrote something. It's called The Memorial and Remonstrance. And I believe the year is 1785, but the point of it is that he said, look, if you look at Christianity historically, when did it do the best? In the first three centuries, that's when the state wasn't involved in forcing the guy, to worship such a way. But he says, why don't we allow, you know, competition, essentially? I mean, I'm paraphrasing what he's saying,
yeah.
but he says, not everybody that's looked at the evidence have been convinced by the evidence of the faith the way we have. So he's starting out as a Christian in saying this, but he says, let's, you know, not have the state decide which religions we're going to endorse or which denominations.
Yes, and you know, that's so important. And I think whenever people hear about, you know, like I said, 2 million people have left the Southern Baptist Convention, or they hear that Lutherans or Methodists are leaving the denomination in droves, the assumption is, oh, they've become atheists. That's the assumption. But what you really have is you have a lot of Lutherans and Methodists and Episcopalians, maybe, that have decided to leave, but they've now become, quote-unquote, evangelicals.
Wow.
And even that category, as you now know, is a category that's difficult to define because it's a residual category that captures so many people.
How many Americans would you estimate go to church, let's say, twice a month? Do we know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have that right in front of me right now, but I would say,
roughly,
you know, as many, between 50 to 100 million.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of people. that's
a lot of people.
Yeah. Wow.
And, you know, that doesn't even capture the millions of people that participate in weekly Bible studies.
Hmm.
I know people that are participating in 3 and 4 Bible studies a week. And some of these are in groups of 3 or 4, and some are in groups of 600. None of this gets measured in our traditional data.
Mm.
And so there are things like community Bible study or Bible study fellowship that take place in most cities around the country. They're in skyscrapers in New York City, and they're in congregations, and they're in houses in neighborhoods. Those all are unmeasured largely, unless you specifically ask a question on a survey. Outside of religious church attendance, do you participate in other kinds of religious activities like, you know, small groups or cell groups? And the answers are rather, you know, shocking, the level of participation. But that's not quite the narrative that I think so many want to hear. I mean, if you're someone that's completely secular, perhaps you want a narrative that suggests that everyone's becoming an atheist. But as I've told you before, that figure seems to hold pretty tight around 4%.
Website is what, sir? Your website?
Yes. Yes. BaylorISR.org.
Dr. Byron Johnson, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you, Dr. Newcomb. Take care.